Respiratory tract. Respiratory infections may often cause significant illness for elderly persons in the LTC facility setting. They are the leading cause of death in LTC facilities, with an incidence of between 0.3 and 2.5 infections per 1,000 resident days and an estimated 0.16 million to 2.57 million cases annually. Common respiratory infections in the LTC population include upper respiratory infections, bronchitis, pneumonia, and tuberculosis, TB. Viruses, including respiratory syncytial virus, influenza, and adenoviruses, and bacteria, including Haemophilus influenzae, Staphylococci, and Streptococci, may cause respiratory tract infections in elderly persons in LTC due to the decline of immunologic memory as part of the aging process. Pneumonia. Pneumonia causes a high rate of infection every year and is a leading cause of death. Residents in LTC facilities are often predisposed to pneumonia because of the use of feeding tubes, issues with swallowing and aspiration, inability to clear their airways, decreased functional status, and insufficient oral care. A number of bacteria and viruses can cause pneumonia, including but not limited to influenza, streptococcus, respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, and SARS-CoV-2. Pneumonia may present atypically in the elderly population, with fever being the most common symptom, followed by new or increased cough and altered mental status. Symptoms of pneumonia include lower respiratory tract infections with nonproductive cough, fever, and malaise. Influenza. Elderly persons living in group settings, including LTC facilities, are susceptible to circulating influenza viruses. Factors placing LTC residents at high risk for influenza infection include their proximity to other residents, the frequency and closeness of contact with healthcare personnel, HCP, and the potential for exposure to visitors and family. Influenza can be spread 1 to 2 days prior to symptoms being present, creating a challenge for containing transmission in these settings. Typically, influenza results in systemic symptoms, such as fever and chills, headache, myalgia, malaise, and anorexia, as well as respiratory symptoms, including dry cough, severe pharyngeal pain, nasal obstruction, and discharge. Certain strains of influenza type A may cause additional symptoms, diarrhea, vomiting, abdominal pain, chest pain, bleeding from nose and gums, respiratory distress, hoarseness, and pneumonia. However, influenza may present with atypical signs of infection among LTC facility residents, resulting in a delay in diagnosis and implementation of infection prevention strategies. In elderly adults, influenza may present with a less pronounced onset of fever and cough and more generalized complaints, including mental status changes. Within congregate living settings, such as skilled nursing facilities, a cluster of residents with similar symptoms is often a clue to an influenza outbreak. Influenza outbreaks have been described in LTC facilities related to poor vaccination rates among HCP as well as residents. Outbreaks in LTC facilities may have severe and even deadly consequences for residents. Because influenza is easily transmitted, it is important that influenza vaccination be offered to all residents and HCP during the influenza season, which provides both individual protection and herd immunity, that is, group protection. Residents with suspected cases of influenza should be separated from other residents to reduce the risk of transmission. Laboratory confirmation of influenza is important to ensure implementation of effective infection prevention and treatment strategies, including use of antiviral medications effective against influenza, which may prevent death and may reduce the length of influenza illness. Elderly individuals are especially at risk for secondary pneumonia and other complications from influenza. Tuberculosis. Within 2 to 8 weeks of exposure to tuberculosis, special immune cells, macrophages, ingest and form a barrier shell around the tubercle bacilli. This barrier shell, granuloma, keeps the bacilli contained and under control, latent TB, or LTBI. Individuals with LTBI will have a positive screening test for TB but are not contagious. If the immune system cannot keep the tubercle bacilli under control, the bacilli begin to rapidly multiply, TB disease, signs and symptoms appear, and the individual can transmit the disease. Without treatment, approximately 5% of persons exposed to TB will develop disease in the first or second year after infection and another 5% sometime later in life. Several age-associated changes in older adults predispose reactivation of LTBI. Decreased cellular immunity, medications that suppress the immune system, comorbidities, and malnutrition, in addition to lack of LTBI treatment, contribute to an increased risk of reactivation. Although TB cases and deaths have decreased in the U.S., individuals 65 years and older continue to have the highest rates, at 5.1 per 100,000 in population, and comprise 22% of the reported cases of TB in the U.S. Symptoms caused by tuberculosis are variable and depend on the stage and location of tuberculosis infection. Primary TB is usually asymptomatic, although a few individuals may develop fevers, cough, or erythema nodosum. Post-primary TB typically manifests with a productive cough, fevers, hemoptysis, and night sweats, with respiratory symptoms usually lasting more than 2 to 3 weeks. Extrapulmonary TB may have many different symptoms, depending on which other organs are involved. For example, pleural involvement may cause pleuritic chest pain, while pericardial TB may present with fevers, weight loss, pain, and later with hemodynamic compromise. Key point: screening and treatment of LTBI is recommended for groups with a high prevalence of LTBI and/or those at risk for TB exposure/disease. Two methods are recommended: the tuberculin skin test, TST, and the interferon gamma release assay, IGRA. Individuals who are subject to these recommendations include healthcare personnel, LTC facility residents and employees, and patients with HIV, end-stage renal disease, diabetes, or other immunosuppressing diseases. Those who have been exposed to a patient or resident with active TB should also be tested. Respiratory syncytial virus. Respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, is an under-recognized illness in older adults that has been associated with outbreaks in LTC facilities. Exposure risk to RSV may be increased during intergenerational enrichment activities. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, adults with chronic heart or lung disease and those with weakened immune systems are at highest risk for severe RSV infection. The CDC states that typical symptoms include mild cold-like symptoms, but that RSV can lead to pneumonia and more severe symptoms for people with asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and congestive heart failure. Urinary tract. Infections in the urinary system are the second most common type of infection, falling well behind all of the various types of respiratory infections. The urinary system consists of the urethra, the bladder, the ureters, and the kidneys and is generally considered to be sterile. The term urinary tract infection, UTI, refers to a bacterial or fungal infection of the urinary tract. UTI is a nonspecific term covering a wide range of disease conditions, ranging from asymptomatic bacteriuria and urethritis to urinary sepsis. In some settings, these infections are divided into lower tract infections, referred to as cystitis, and upper tract infections, referred to as pyelonephritis. Cystitis is an inflammation of the bladder after bacterial adhesion or invasion of the bladder wall. It may be either asymptomatic or symptomatic. Acute uncomplicated cystitis is the most common type of UTI in adult women. Pyelonephritis is a serious infection with substantial morbidity, which can lead to bacteremia, sepsis, and renal abscess. Susceptibility to UTI is common to all people. However, there are specific groups that are more susceptible than others. These groups include male infants, all females, especially sexually active females, people with diabetes, elderly individuals, immunosuppressed individuals, patients with spinal cord injuries, patients with indwelling urinary catheters and stents, and patients with urological abnormalities. We will now discuss some specific factors relevant to LTC settings in more detail. The elderly. As the population ages and more elderly individuals are institutionalized, the rates of UTIs increase. Close proximity of living arrangements, dementia, confusion, device use, and debility all play a role in increased rates of infection in this population. UTIs remain a common problem in the LTC facility setting. Residents in LTC facilities often have bacteriuria, although this is not commonly associated with adverse outcomes in these residents. That is asymptomatic bacteriuria. Traditional symptoms of a UTI include fever, flank pain, dysuria, and urination urgency and frequency. UTIs can also be associated with altered mental status, declining ADL, activities of daily living, scores, and new onset incontinence in residents. Elderly females. Benign bacteriuria occurs in elderly females who often have few or no symptoms, Relaxation of the pelvic musculature allows for varying degrees of cystocele or rectocele. Benign bacteriuria is often identified on routine urinalysis collected for other purposes. It has been shown that these individuals do not go on to develop symptomatic UTIs, ascending infection, or bacteremia. This situation does not warrant treatment. Acute UTIs will cause different symptoms in healthy immunocompetent premenopausal women than in postmenopausal women. Premenopausal women present with more localized symptoms of infection such as frequent, painful, and burning urination. Postmenopausal women complain of more severe symptoms related to storage of urine, generalized lower abdominal pain, lower back pain, constipation, diarrhea, nausea, nocturnal incontinence, and urgency. Escherichia coli, E. coli, is the most commonly isolated pathogen. Effects of menopause and sexual activity play a role as risk factors for disease transmission in healthy pre- and postmenopausal women. Elderly males. As a male ages, benign prostatic hypertrophy develops and residuals of urine remain in the bladder after voiding. This residual urine forms a nutritive medium for bacterial growth. As with females, E. coli is the most commonly isolated pathogen, but in the LTC setting, Proteus mirabilis is also common. The UTI rates for males as they age approach that's seen in females. By age 80, 50% of males will have had a UTI. Morbidity from infection is considerably higher for males. Thus, their infections are often symptomatic and may lead to infections of the prostate, epididymitis, or testes. Chronic prostatitis is very difficult to eradicate and is a common cause of chronic bacteriuria in men. Caudias, an indwelling urinary catheter, is a drainage tube that is inserted into the urinary bladder through the urethra. It is then left in place, connected to a drainage bag, including leg bags. It is also sometimes referred to as a Foley catheter. UTIs are the most common type of HAI. Approximately 80% of UTIs are associated with the use of indwelling urinary drainage devices. The voiding habits of approximately 5% of LTC residents are managed by indwelling catheters. Infections resulting from these devices are modest for most individuals, with low morbidity and mortality. The daily risk of urinary tract infection from an indwelling urethral catheter ranges from 3% to 7%. The gender of catheterized residents impacts the transmission of infections. Males generally become infected via the intraluminal route from a contaminated drainage bag. Females become infected from contamination by the transurethral migration of bacteria up the extraluminal surface of the catheter. Other risk factors associated with caudias include age, diabetes, and prolonged catheterization. In fact, the duration of catheterization is the most important factor in development of bacteriuria. Key point. Pyuria development in short-term catheterized residents is not indicative of infection and should not be used as a criterion for urine culture or as an indication for antimicrobial treatment. 90% of residents with significant bacteriuria are asymptomatic for any signs or symptoms of a UTI. When symptoms are present, they typically include burning or pain in the lower abdomen, below the stomach, and fever. Strategies relevant to delaying the onset of bacteriuria in short-term catheterized patients will not necessarily work in patients with chronic, long-term catheterization. Every patient's urethral catheter will become coated with biofilm, which will lead to infection given enough time. The only way to prevent such an infection is to not use a catheter or to remove the catheter before bacteriuria is established. The development of a caudy is associated with significant morbidity and some risk of mortality. The resident's extended length of stay, development of antibiotic-resistant organisms, and increased costs have resulted in an emphasis on the appropriate use of the catheter. Physicians and nurses often fail to document the reasons for using a catheter, resulting in large numbers of inappropriate catheterizations. Indwelling catheter alternatives. Alternatives to indwelling urinary catheters often found in the LTC facility environment include intermittent catheterization and suprapubic and external catheters. The preferred catheterization types rated from least risk of UTI to greatest are external urinary devices, intermittent catheterization, suprapubic catheterization, indwelling urinary catheterization. To promote uninterrupted sleep, external urinary devices may be used at nighttime as an alternative to indwelling urinary catheterization with residents who are incontinent or have urinary urgency. These devices may be used in conjunction with a toileting schedule during the daytime hours to promote independence. Leg bags are commonly used in the LTC facility to improve mobility in a resident with a urinary catheter. These may pose a risk for infection due to the reflux of urine as well as frequent changing between urinary bags that open the urinary collection system. Therefore, it is important that any changes to the urinary collection bag be done using aseptic techniques, cleaning the connecting ports with alcohol and cleaning the leg bag between uses. Skin and soft tissue infections. Skin and soft tissue infections, SSTIs, may occur at three levels. Epidermis. This is the outermost layer of the skin, and it forms a protective layer against infection. The epidermis may be bypassed through hair follicles and sebaceous glands or through a wound that disrupts it. Dermis. This layer is separated from the epidermis by a basement membrane and from the deep fascia by an adipose-rich subcutaneous region. The interruption of dermal blood flow can restrict humoral and cellular host defenses against invading microorganisms and predispose a person to infection. Subcutaneous tissue and deep fascia. The subcutaneous tissue layer is composed of fat cells, which serve as heat insulators, shock absorbers, and depots of caloric reserves. The superficial fascia separates the skin from underlying muscles and a deep facial layer. An infection may involve only one of these levels or concurrently manifest in multiple levels. Skin integrity. Skin integrity and the invasive potential of microbial pathogens each contributes to host-microbe interactions associated with skin and soft tissue infection. Skin and soft tissue infections, SSTIs, often arise from defects in the integrity of the epidermis associated with trauma, postoperative wounds, burns, or an underlying dermatosis. In certain circumstances, the portal of entry can be remote from the site of clinical infection, as evident in bacterial cellulitis of the lower extremities associated with tinea pedis and toe web intertrigo. In some cases of cutaneous infection, the portal of entry cannot be identified. Focal skin infection may be the result of hematogenous seeding of the skin, as occurs in bacterial endocarditis or sepsis. Isolation of the etiological microorganism is often unsuccessful because of lack of purulence for diagnostic test specimen procurement, specimen transport and processing, or laboratory detection methods. Host systemic defense mechanisms. Local blood circulation and host immune defenses are the primary determinants of the host response to invasive pathogens. The systemic clinical findings associated with SSTIs are often mediated by host cytokines. Lymphedema, chronic venous insufficiency, prior cellulitis, nephrotic syndrome, and diabetes mellitus are some of the recognized local and systemic predisposing factors to SSTIs. Infecting microbes may enter the lymphatic system, resulting in lymphangitis and regional lymphadenitis, or they may enter the circulatory system and cause bacteremia. Common skin infections. Multiple common skin and soft tissue infections may be caused by various pathogens and are not attributable to a single organism. Folliculitis. This is a circumscribed infectious process originating in hair follicles that can be classified as superficial or deep and by microbial etiology. The initial lesions appear papulo-urticarial, usually within 48 hours of exposure, with evolution to pustular folliculitis. Furuncules and carbuncles. A furuncle, or boil, is a focal erythematous skin infection complicating an antecedent folliculitis or developing as a deep nodule near a hair follicle. It almost never occurs on the palms or the soles. A relatively thick dermis prevents spontaneous drainage to the surface and contributes to the hard, nodular, painful character of the lesion. Eventually, abscess formation occurs. A carbuncle is larger than a furuncle, with infection spreading under and between fibrous septa in deep skin tissues, forming a series of interconnected small abscesses. Carbuncles usually occur at the nape of the neck or on the back or thighs, with drainage through clustered skin sites. Erysipelas. This is a painful, bright red, edematous, indurated skin plaque with an advancing raised border, sharply defined from the surrounding, uninfected skin. The most common sites of infection are the legs and the face, cellulitis. This is similar to erysipelas, but extends into subcutaneous tissues. It is also distinct in that it is not raised or sharply defined from the surrounding skin. Quite painful and tender, Most cases of cellulitis occur on the legs, usually below the knees. In some cases, the overlying epidermis undergoes bullous formation or even focal necrosis, resulting in epidermal sloughing and erosion. Dermal and subcutaneous abscess formation rarely occurs. Red linear streaking and tender regional lymphadenopathy reflect efferent infection and lymphangitis. Paronychia. Paronychia is infection of the proximal or lateral fingernail or toenail folds. The development of paronychia has been associated with repeated trauma to the hands or feet or chronic moisture. Example, from dishwashing. Necrotizing fasciitis. This is an aggressive infection that involves fascia and adjacent soft tissues with a characteristic undermining of tissue planes. There are several types. Type 1. This is a mixed infection caused by common aerobic and anaerobic bacteria. Gas in the soft tissues is a classic feature of this infection. It is particularly common in postoperative cases or patients with diabetes mellitus or peripheral vascular disease. The type 1 infection usually occurs at or near a surgical site. Fournier gangrene. This is a distinctive form of type 1 necrotizing fasciitis typically affecting the male perineum and scrotum, with occasional extension to the abdominal wall or buttocks. In women, it can occur between the perineum and vagina. Predisposing factors include diabetes mellitus, alcohol abuse, local trauma, paraphimosis, periurethral extravasation of urine, pararectal or perianal infection, and pelvic surgery. These infections begin abruptly with severe pain, and they may spread rapidly to the anterior abdominal wall or gluteal tissues. Cellulitis occurs near the portal of entry, and the involved area usually becomes progressively indurated and tender. As gangrene of the perineum develops, swelling and crepitation increase. Type 2. Gas is absent from the soft tissues in type 2 necrotizing fasciitis, yet there is rapid clinical progression often associated with systemic signs suggestive of toxic shock syndrome. Gangrene results after thrombosis of cutaneous and deep blood vessels and is often associated with focal intense pain. The type 2 infection may occur in otherwise healthy individuals and is characterized by sudden onset and widespread necrosis of fascia and deep subcutaneous tissues, sometimes with initial sparing of the skin and muscle. Gas gangrene. Gas gangrene is usually induced by deep, penetrating trauma, example, gunshot or stab wound, crush injury. The wound causes compromise of the local blood supply and creates a relatively anaerobic tissue environment, promoting the proliferation of Clostridium perfringens or related clostridial species. Clostridial soft tissue infection is usually heralded by intense and progressive pain at the affected site. Signs of systemic toxicity, example, fever, chills, tachycardia, shock, often follow. Tinea. Tinea refers to a series of common fungal infections and diseases of the skin. While all are fungus-based, they may be caused by many different genera and species of fungus. Many of these may be referred to as ringworm. The differentiation of disease type refers to the location of the ringworm on the host body. These diseases may present special concerns for ancillary services, such as barber/salon services and podiatry/nail care services. Skin infections due to pre-existing damage. Infections may develop in areas of pre-existing damage, such as postoperative wounds, accidental trauma, bites, pressure ulcers, and diabetic foot ulcers. The microbial etiology often reflects a pre-existing condition and the resident microbial flora. These infections are usually localized, but they can sometimes result in deep tissue invasion with consequent risk for bacteremia and osteomyelitis. Many of the above infections are included. These are covered elsewhere in the discussions of the organisms that cause them. However, of particular importance in LTC facilities are pressure ulcers, sometimes called decubitus ulcers, and diabetic foot infections. Pressure ulcer infections are most commonly associated with immobility, advanced age, and inadequate nutrition, yet they can sometimes be associated with severe morbidity and sepsis. The most frequently affected anatomic areas are the sacrum, the coccyx, the greater trochanters, the feet, the elbows, and other pressure sites in bedbound individuals. Pressure ulcers in the sacrum, the hip, and the foot are particularly prone to colonization and secondary polymicrobial infection with fecal flora. In most cases, these infections require combined medical and surgical care, with challenges related to chronic cutaneous wounds that are refractory to available advanced therapies. Diabetic foot infections are a significant cause of chronic osteomyelitis, limb loss, and sepsis in diabetic patients. Staphylococcus aureus may cause initial diabetic foot infections. However, many other organisms may cause superinfections, for example, Enterobacteriales, anaerobes, particularly the Bacteroides fragilis group, Enterococci, and Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Therapy is often complicated by physical factors such as patient immobility, diminished cutaneous sensation, neuropathy, and loss of subcutaneous soft tissue mass, padding over bony protuberances. Chronic foot ulcers are common problems in diabetic patients with neuropathy, and optimal glucose control is an important component of treatment response. Successful treatment may require debridement of devitalized tissue or calluses, the design of physical padding or prostheses to prevent continued tissue trauma, or hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and it is best accomplished through cooperative management with an orthopedic surgeon. Gastrointestinal tract infections. Acute gastroenteritis is significant in elderly persons because it can lead to more serious illness and complications, including dehydration, debilitation, hospitalization, and death. Elderly persons in LTC facilities are at an increased risk of contracting and transmitting gastroenteritis because of the use of shared bathrooms and common dining and rehabilitation facilities and increased close proximity to others in general. Other risks for transmission of gastroenteritis are underlying comorbidities including dementia, cognitive impairment, and decreased gastric acid. Outbreaks in LTC facilities have been caused by rotavirus, enterovirus, norovirus, Clostridioides difficile, Bacillus cereus, Escherichia coli, Campylobacter, Clostridium perfringens, Salmonella, and Giardia lamblia. Proper food preparation and storage are important to decrease the risk of foodborne outbreaks. The severity of acute gastroenteritis may range from asymptomatic infection to severe infections leading to dehydration and death, with more severe cases tending to affect children and elderly persons. Typical symptoms include abdominal cramps, pain and tenderness, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and fever. Certain pathogens may additionally cause headache, myalgia, generalized weakness, anorexia, loss of appetite, tenesmus, and malaise. Diarrhea and vomiting may also lead to dehydration. Symptom combinations, duration, and details. That is, diarrheal consistency or the presence of mucus or blood in stool may help narrow down the potential infecting microbe, although laboratory testing is necessary to confirm identification. Bloodborne pathogens. Recall that bloodstream infections, BSIs, are infections in the vascular system, including bacteremia, fungemia, and viremia. According to a study from Joseph M. Malott, Amar Tayara, and Susan Goodenough published in Clinical Infectious Diseases, E. coli, P. mirabilis, and S. aureus are commonly associated with bacteremia. The three most prevalent forms of bloodborne pathogens that cause viremia are hepatitis B, HBV, hepatitis C, HCV, and human immunodeficiency virus, HIV. Transmission of hepatitis B and hepatitis C to residents requiring assisted blood glucose monitoring, ABGM, may occur through the improper use or reuse of contaminated blood glucose testing equipment, the use of blood glucose testing equipment while not wearing gloves, or unsafe injection practices. A significant number of resident exposures and active cases of hepatitis B disease and deaths have been attributed to improper ABGM. The numbers, however, are believed to be vastly underreported. Lack of education and training, the rush to complete a task due to multiple assignments and inadequate staff, the practice of sharing equipment among residents, and the lack of needed supplies all contribute to increased transmission of bloodborne pathogens. Hepatitis and other viral pathogens may cause asymptomatic infections, or the infections may be asymptomatic for weeks or months, such as HBV, or years, HIV, before symptoms present. A primary symptom for HBV and HCV is jaundice, and this may be used to categorize the appearance of other typical symptoms. Before jaundice appears, there may be nonspecific symptoms like malaise, fatigue, fever, and others. Following the appearance of jaundice, dark urine, pale-colored stools, pruritus, and anorexia may be present. For other infections such as HIV, symptoms may appear flu-like or otherwise nonspecific, such as fever or weight loss. In particular, earlier stages of the HIV progression present symptoms related to viral multiplication in the lymphatic or nervous systems. For other bloodstream infections, such as those resulting from vascular access devices, typical symptoms include fever/chills, localized pain at the site of insertion, redness originating at the site of insertion that spreads, nausea/vomiting, diarrhea, cough, dyspnea, and expectoration. Atypical symptoms that are reported include malaise, dizziness or unsteadiness, immobility, paresis, speaking difficulties, and confusion. Multiple drug-resistant organisms, EMDROS. Key point. Some pathogen strains are multiple drug-resistant organisms, EMDROS. EMDROS develop resistance to multiple antimicrobials, especially those to which the organism is usually susceptible and that are traditionally used for treatment. These pose considerable challenges in healthcare settings. Note that more than one mechanism may result in antimicrobial resistance. One form, known as intrinsic resistance, is naturally occurring. Evolutionary pressures for thousands of years led to organisms developing mechanisms to evade other naturally occurring agents that could inhibit or destroy them. Intrinsic resistance reflects a characteristic of the microbe that allows it to avoid targeting or harm from the agent it is resistant to. This may be something like a gram-positive cell wall that protects the microbe against certain agents. As such, intrinsic resistance is predictable following the positive identification of the microbe. The other form of antimicrobial resistance, which results in EMDROS, is known as acquired resistance. Acquired resistance represents the evolution of a microbe that results in its change from being susceptible to a specific treatment to being resistant. This is due to selective pressure created by the use of antimicrobials. As such, we will define antimicrobial resistance as the ability of microorganisms to grow when treated by a drug that was previously an effective antimicrobial agent. Enterococci species are a good example of intrinsic versus acquired resistance. Enterococci gallinarum and Enterococcus casuliflavus/flavescens are intrinsically resistant to vancomycin. They will always be vancomycin resistant. Enterococcus faecalis and Enterococcus faecium, on the other hand, are vancomycin sensitive until they acquire the vancomycin resistant gene from another organism. Because of the continued existence of both resistant and non-resistant organisms, simply identifying a microbe is not enough to determine if it is resistant or not. Resistance can spread through multiplication of the organism, known as vertical transmission. It can also spread through horizontal transmission, through the transfer of mobile genetic material from one microbe to another. Multiple drug-resistant organisms, EMDROS, develop resistance to multiple antimicrobials, especially those that are traditionally used for treatment. These pose considerable challenges in healthcare settings. They may be especially prevalent in LTC facilities. Successful prevention and control of EMDROS requires the use of a variety of combined interventions. Among the commonly used are improved use of and compliance with hand hygiene procedures, implementation of contact precautions, surveillance, healthcare personnel education, improved environmental cleaning, correct and appropriate selection and use of antimicrobials, enhanced communication within and between facilities with regard to residents with EMDROS. Though the particulars of antibiotics classes will be discussed elsewhere in this module, it is worthwhile to list specific details here for both ESBLs and CREs. ESBLs, extended-spectrum beta-lactamases, are enzymes that confer resistance to most beta-lactam antibiotics, including penicillins, cephalosporins, and the monobactam estrianum. CREs, carbapenem-resistant enterobacteriales, are bacteria that are resistant to at least one of the carbapenem antibiotics, ertapenem, meropenem, doropenem, or imipenem, or that produce a carbapenemase, an enzyme that can make them resistant to carbapenem antibiotics. ESBLs and CREs are applicable to enterobacterials such as, but not limited to, species of Escherichia, Enterobacter, Klebsiella, Proteus, Salmonella, Serratia, and Shigella. The emergence of ESBLs and CREs makes treatment challenging, especially CREs, as carbapenems are usually the last treatment option for other EMDRO infections in extremely sick residents.